Hello and welcome to the RVC podcast, Veterinary Science on the Move. My name is Matthias Kleins, and today I will be talking to Dr. Donald Palmer about his research into the age-related changes of the immune system. Donald, your research interest is in immunosenescence, which is the process how aging affects the functionality of the immune system. Before we start talking more about immunosenescence, could you give our listeners an idea of what the overall functions of the immune system are, which parts there are in the immune system, and which ones are predominantly affected by immunosenescence?
Basically, the premise of the immune system, the whole basis of it, is to distinguish between self and non-self. That's so-called the mechanistic point of the immune system. In sense, and what I mean is that anything that's foreign, the immune system will destroy. So the immune system has evolved to develop a tolerance to its own body parts, but anything that's different, it will destroy, such as viruses, bacteria, any foreign sort of objects. And clinically, that may also refer to transplantation.
Now, it's pretty similar to border patrols, basically.
Exactly, yeah. Now, the key thing about the immune system is that it's vital for well-being, in the sense that if you don't have an immune system, the ability to fight infection goes away. And how the immune system works, basically think about it like, as you say, the patrol. Think of it like the police, where the police have got various different weapons in order to actually evade, or not so much evade, but to actually fight crime. You've got your, you know, special forces, you've got the bobbies on the beat, etc. And that's how the immune system has evolved with various players. The immune system can be broken down into two, the innate and the adaptive. And what the innate refers to cells that are involved in sort of like the frontline border patrol. These consist of, say, your macrophages. These are the cells that are gobbling up foreign organisms.
So these would be the patrolling officers rather than anything else, while there might also be something like the Scotland Yard.
Yeah, special patrol. So what you have, you've got your macrophages, you've got your neutrophils, or what's referred to as your leukocytes. Mm-hmm. Neutrophils, basophils, or eosinophils. So they're a major part of the innate. And there's also substances that relate to the innate. And what I mean by that, I'm talking about complement, for example.
So that's a protein which
that's
circulates.
A protein, yeah. That's a protein that's circulating, that's produced in the liver. And again, based on infection, say bacteria or yeast, you will find that complement is then broken down. Think of the cascade as, say, for example, of sort of the blood cascade, the clotting mechanisms, mm-hmm. where these are proteins that then get broken down into a protein, into enzymes that then destroy bacteria. So that's complement. And you also have got interferons, such as alpha and beta, that are produced naturally by cells, say, that have been infected by a virus. It's a way of the cells telling other cells in the immune system that they're
I'm infected.
Exactly.
I need some help.
And also, when you think about inflammation, the whole basis of inflammation, where you release prostaglandins and inflammatory mediators, they're also part of the innate immune system. Then there's the other side, the adaptive immune system. And the adaptive immune system is what it says. It adapts to the environment. And the major players for that are your T cells and your B cells. B cells are primarily involved as part of what we refer to as a humoral response. They make antibodies. And B cells make antibodies to a wide variety of foreign organisms and substances. They make antibodies to bacteria, to toxins, to viral particles, and so forth. Whereas T cells actually, there's two forms of T cells. There are your cytotoxic T cells. There are CD8 cytotoxic cells that mostly kill, say, either tumors or virally infected cells. Mm-hmm. And there's CD4 T cells, which is sort of like the main player. They're kind of like the orchestrator of the immune system. They're CD4 positive, and they actually help all...
They're also called T helper cells, right?
Exactly. And they help all aspects of the immune system. So they help B cells make antibodies, and they also make... they also help T cells, such as T cells, function. Then you also got natural killer cells that are also produced by primary lymphoid organs. Now, the real key about the adaptive immune system is that they've got receptors on the cell surface. And so, and their receptors is what recognize antigen, and their receptors are made from genetical component that put together during development. So each lymphocyte that comes out of a primary lymphoid organ, where it's the bone marrow for B cells and it's the thymus for T cells, has a unique receptor. And why they call it adaptive is that each one is adapted to a particular antigen. So
that means each of those B cells or T cells, which originally come from the thymus or the bone marrow, would be able to detect one particular pathogen.
Yeah.
And we basically have all of these by default.
Yeah.
But once an infection occurs, what happens is that those T cells or B cells are actually activated, they reproduce.
Yeah.
And for the future, they're more abundantly available in the immune system.
Yeah.
More readily available.
I'm going to tell you, and that's really the hallmark of what we refer to as an adaptive immune system. In a sense, once those cells that have been produced, they're referred to as naive. And once they've encountered an antigen, they become memory. And those memory cells is a hallmark. And that's the major difference
between adaptive and innate immunity.
Yeah. So innate immunity, if the macrophage encounters the same bacteria, it would react to it the same way time and time again. Whereas an adaptive immune system will, if it meets an antigen for the second time, it will respond quicker and it produced a more or less a different array of sort of proteins. So for example, let's say for antibody, when you encounter an antigen for the first time, you make an IgM. But when you encounter the antigen again, you make an IgG. And these different classes of antibodies have different properties. And the hallmark, really, of an effective immune system is such that you want to make a secondary response, which then is quicker, faster, and can clear the pathogen. And this is really what vaccination is all about. What vaccination is doing is it's boosting the immune system and making it ready. It
basically imitates the first encounter.
Exactly.
And therefore primes the body. So your real interest in the immune system is not just how it generally functions,
No. But
in your research, you're actually looking at a process which is called immunosenescence. So that's basically aging of the immune system. When did people actually realize that something like immunosenescence exists, and which parts of the immune system that we've just been talking about are affected by this process of aging of the immune system?
Well, as I mentioned in the test, we know the importance of the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at mutations that are involved in how our white blood cells are made, if there's a defect in those, you'll find that those individuals have real problems in clearing an infection. So the clinical implications of having a defective immune system is quite clear. And what's now become apparent is the fact that as we get older, there's now more and more evidence to suggest, which was anecdotal, but now we've got more definitive evidence, is that your immune system and immune function also decline with age.
Mm-hmm.
And although these may not be manifested when I say, in their 20s, 30s, 40s or 50s, but the clinical manifestation that now people seem to think may be, for example, there's an increase in tumours. And although what the effect of the immune system on tumours has sort of long been sort of discussed, more and more evidence is suggesting that our immune system is involved in tumour surveillance. And so perhaps with a decline in function of the immune system with age, there's now an incidence of tumours. We also know that one aspect of the immune system is to control responses. And what we now know is that there's a greater incidence in autoimmunity with age. So the regulation is now not fully checked.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition, groups in Italy have coined the term inflammaging. And this relates to autoimmunity. So each time we make an immune response, there are byproducts of various factors. And it's a built-up of all these factors that gives rise to many clinical manifestations of around what they call inflammation. So when you look at diabetes, osteoporosis, etc., etc., all these diseases actually have an inflammatory origin. And the idea is that this continuous bombardment of the immune system with pathogens. One of the downside, perhaps there's now an increase in various cytokines and other factors, and the build-up of those might give rise to some of these. And in addition to that, one of the sort of main sort of aspects is the fact that now in the elderly we see a higher increase in certain diseases, bacterial as well as sort of viral infections. And so what the general premise of this is that with this decline in immune function, we're now seeing these diseases. And in addition, you have to remember, with older animals as well, such as tumours, etc., it's clearly a phenomenon that's in many species.
So this is not purely scientific interest and something for the ivory tower, but there is actually a clinical application to immunosenescence or to potential solutions to the problem of immunosenescence.
Well, yeah, I think one of the key things about immunosenescence, and not so much with immunosenescence, but I think with the sort of aging, biology of aging, is the fact that we're now seeing, what we're now seeing, I should say, is that in Western Europe, the fastest growing age group are the over 65s. So in a society, there are going to be some questions that we need to address, need to resolve. With a larger increase of an aging population, one of the potential threats could be of a new infection. People are concerned about SARS, bird flu, etc. And with, say, those sort of infections, if you get new and emerging zoonotic infections, what you may find are twofold. In the young, particularly the very young, their immune system is not developed, it's not matured. So you could imagine that they may have problems dealing with infections. But, and in addition, with the very old, is their immune system is now failing, so they can't actually deal with this. And at a population and a society level, this has got real implications, huge implications.
So basically, if we would manage to identify factors which we could turn into drugs which modify this immunosenescence process, they would be useful in situations like that. You've been looking at the thymus as more or less a model of immunosenescence, because possibly many of our listeners will be aware of the fact that the thymus is part of the immune system, produces T cells, and even in a normal animal at a certain age starts to deteriorate and starts to involute. What exactly have you been looking at in the thymus, and how are you trying to translate that into a better understanding of immunosenescence as a whole?
This is an interesting question and slightly complicated. I'll try and explain to your readers, who hopefully have attended my lectures on, on T-cell development and fully aware of the role of the thymus, fantastic organ. So let me explain first of what is happening in the periphery. So in the periphery, and let's just keep it simple, is the peripheral pool, and what I mean by that is that the number of lymphocytes doesn't seem to change with age. There's now sufficient amount of data to suggest that if we've got 100 T cells, we always have 100 T cells, no matter what age.
No matter whether it's me or my grandfather, we all have the
same number of T cells
and B cells.
Exactly. But what we're now starting to see is that the quality and the type of T cells appear to differ with age. So let's start at someone who's quite young. When you're young, you are producing a lot of new T cells, naive T cells. So in your peripheral pool of 100 T cells, most of those T cells will be naive, they'll be fresh and raring to go. But as you get older, you are encountering many pathogens. So what's happening now is that your peripheral pool is encountering such that they're now developing memory lymphocytes. So over time, there are two things. As you're right, you mentioned the thymus, the major organ where you're producing T cells, decreases with age. So what you find, there are two things. Your T cell production is getting shorter, getting smaller, but also the amount of memory you encounter is increasing. So in older people, you may find that with those 100 T cells, a higher proportion are now memory cells. And some of them may also be what we refer to as replicative senescence. And what I mean by that is that evidence suggests that they may be exhausted, but T cells are quite long-lived, so they don't die. So they clog up the actual peripheral pool. So in this peripheral pool of...
The ratio of unuseful T cells is increasing.
Yeah, and the number of naive T cells now are also smaller. And so whereas before, and the role of the thymus, funny, people have always noticed that the thymus, which, as I say, is an organ above the heart, has always been known to shrink. It's been, when you do autopsies and various examinations have been performed, people have always noted this, but and actually didn't know what the function of the thymus was, but they noted that it got smaller. But now there is a clinical manifestation for this, in the sense that with this reduction in thymus size, it's quite clear then that although this may not have no effect, you know, when one's in their 40s or 50s, because we're now living longer, we're now starting to see some of the consequence of having thymic atrophy. Now, like I said, a lot of workers, people have already identified thymic atrophy and it's been known. And what our area of research has been is to try and understand why we get thymic atrophy. What is it about the thymus that actually involutes?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? What is the cell type that's involved in this involution? So one of the things...
Because we have to imagine that the thymus is an organ per se which is populated with immune cells, right?
Exactly.
So there's basically the interaction between two completely different types of immune cells, and they talk to each other.
Very
and
much
those
so.
Thymic cells, which are epithelial cells as far as I'm aware, they talk to immune cells and prompt them to divide and replicate and therefore provide immunofunction to the periphery.
Absolutely, Matthias. So, and in fact, the epithelial cells are actually developed from the neural crest. In fact, they're actually developed from the same embryonic status as the heart. There's a syndrome called the George syndrome in humans, where it is involved a defect in the development of the heart, which also has a defect in the thymus. So the epithelial cells and the stromal component are actually non-bone marrow derived. So you're right, it's quite an interesting dynamic organ. So you've got epithelial cells sitting there and thymocytes, or should I say bone marrow stem cells, coming into the thymus, getting educated, and then leaving. I guess the analogy could be a university. Students coming into a university, getting educated, getting graduated, and leaving.
So we now will have to be interested in what this education is that the T lymphocytes receive from their thymic epithelial educators to basically possibly in the future modulate immunosenescence in the immune system as a whole.
Yeah, exactly. So what we've shown is the fact that these epithelial cells that are actually the educators, they secrete various factors, various cytokines. And what is known, for example, is that interleukin-7, which is an important cytokine in driving this development and education, decreases with age. And what we've also recently published is the fact that the structure of the epithelial cells are different compared to young mice. Mm-hmm. We also noticed that they have an increase in apoptosis, they have there's more fibrosis in these organs. We've also noted that, for example, that the cells have a greater propensity to become senescent with relationship with markers that we've used. So the epithelial component is not as good as developing and making T cells as it is. So that's one area that we've looked at. But in addition to that, we've also looked at the thymocytes that are coming out of the thymus of animals at different ages. Mm-hmm. And what we've also noted is that the quality of those thymocytes aren't so good. So it's quite clear that the thymus is not doing a good job as it should do when it's younger. And that has, as I say, has important implications for the future in terms of therapy, because once we have an idea of various factors that the epithelial cells are sort of producing that's needed for development, then you
and the
could
ones that decline in the process of aging.
Exactly. So you could start to imagine the fact that such therapies whereby you can induce productions of new T cells might be important in health. And in fact, there's been some excellent work by Danny Durek and others that have been published in the last few years in Nature and in Cell and Science, where they've been looking at HIV individuals. And as you know, HIV primarily attacks the helper T cell CD4. And using various therapies involved in cytokines, they can actually measure T cell output. And they've got an excellent correlation with individuals that have a better survival rate. In essence, those individuals where therapies can give rise to new T cells and increase T cell output, they actually have a better chance of a better prognosis. So there's a real importance in actually driving sort of thymopoiesis and driving new T cells. And I think that's quite important.
So one last question I would possibly have is that there is this general theory in aging that the length of the endings of chromosomes, so-called telomeres, play a role in how old an individual can get, how many times their cells can divide. From what you've just told me, this is then not the case in the immune system. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, there's evidence to suggest that some of our T cells can actually, you're absolutely right, as we divide, our telomeres shorten, and that dictates, there's a biological clock in cells. What's interesting with some of our immune cells is that when cells divide or when they proliferate, they can actually put back telomeres. And so they may have this property of actually being sort of long-lived. Or
Is that because they're stem cell type cells? Because they're from bone marrow stem cells?
That could be the case. Although, as I mentioned, there are cells that undergo replicative senescence.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I think one of the key things, this is still a relatively new area, and I think there's still a lot to be done. On the other aspect, I guess, you know, when you talk about evolution, and perhaps this is interesting, is why would the thymus involute? Is an interesting question to extend it further. And there's anecdotal evidence to suggest that perhaps the immune system is somehow intertwined with the reproductive system. So perhaps the declining ability to reproduce is not surprisingly that there's also a correlation with the ability of the immune system to function. And one theory that a few people have is that the immune system is really vital in terms of reproduction. And once we've reproduced, perhaps then the immune system is no longer important. Mm-hmm. Because when you consider it, for many years, I mean, for you know, up until 100 years ago, the average lifespan was around 40 or 50.
And to be radical, if we don't reproduce, we're not supposed to be around anymore, at least from an evolutionary point of view, right?
I don't want to comment on that. But the thing is, you see, is the fact that the immune system is... So for many, you know, for hundreds of years, the immune system has been evolved to actually feel humans only live up to around 50. And all of a sudden, really in a short space of time, the fact is that this immune system has now got to cope with an extra 30, 40 or 50 years. And most of the increase and improvement in health has actually been through diet and clinical intervention. But there's been no evolutionary change in
adaptation boundaries. Of the immune system or the body as a whole.
Exactly.
Which was aging.
Yeah. So to a certain degree, you've got a system now trying to function still for, you know, for another 30, 40 years. And that's what I was saying. Perhaps the immunosenescence, you won't actually manifest itself, because evidence suggests that you start seeing this decline in making T cells at quite early age. I mean, we have evidence in mice. Mice live up to 2.5 years, and we've got evidence that even up to 6 months, you're now starting to see a decline in sort of T cell numbers in the thymus. So the thymus size starts to shrink. But you probably won't see any clinical signs of that. But perhaps...
Because, as you say, the peripheral pool of T cells will stay the same for a long period of time.
So it's only later on when you're starting to see the shift between naive and now sort of defunct T cells,
mm-hmm.
that you might see this
might have a clinical effect.
Yeah, but I also don't want you to go away to think it's only T cells. I mean, I like to think it's only T cells because I work on T cells. But there's evidence to suggest that our so-called phagocytic cells... Our macrophage and neutrophils are also defective with age. You know, for example, there's a hormone called DHEA, which declines with age. And there's evidence to suggest that neutrophil function requires this hormone. So perhaps the interaction between our sort of reproductive or endocrine system is also going to have some effect. So... It's not just T cells, but there are other sort of white blood cells that might be defective with aging, and I think it's this cumulative effect of all our sort of cells in the immune system that generally are starting to fail.
Well, that was a really interesting insight you gave us into your work and into how the immune system functions and changes over time. I hope that at some point you'll be successful in identifying those factors in the thymus, which possibly will allow us to retard immunosenescence in the future, and probably it'll tell us even more about aging as a whole. Thanks for joining us here today, Donald.
Okay, thank you, Matthias.
That's it from us at the RVC podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we hope that you will join us again next month when we will be celebrating our 20th episode with an episode on atopic dermatitis with Dr. Anke Hendricks, who's a lecturer in veterinary dermatology at the Royal Veterinary College. So if you want to make sure that you don't miss this episode, please join the RVC podcast at itunes.com. Alternatively, of course, you can also download the episode from the RVC webpage. Thank you again for listening, and goodbye.